You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
Max had just bought these beautiful new trainers that he was so proud of, and he was going to wear them to the... You know, and they've still got the bloodstains on them because he can't be there to wash it off. It's a bit gross, but quite cute.
But before all of that, welcome to another NetMums podcast, folks. Thanks for joining us. Now, first of all, I have to say that this is snuck in to the podcast, but I've realised that I've started calling people folks. And that is Jennifer's fault, the Texan who calls everybody folks. Suddenly, I'm calling people folks, Jen. How did that happen?
Wendy, you'll know you're in trouble when you start saying howdy.
Never going to happen. Or you all, because I can't even say it without sounding like a twat. Jen, I'm going to let you introduce our lovely guest, please.
Yes, we are very excited this week on the NetMums podcast to welcome Binky Felstead, the queen of Made in Chelsea. She starred in the show from the very first episode until 2016 and has also recorded two spinoffs with E4, Educating Binky and Born in Chelsea, which documented her pregnancy with her daughter, India. She's a fitness ambassador and is currently the face of Reebok and co-founder of the app Bloss, which connects parents with trusted experts for every stage of the parenting journey. And now, Binky has written The Making of You, a guide to finding your identity and bossing motherhood, which is part memoir and a lot of useful parenting advice all rolled into one. Welcome, Binky.
Hi, guys.
I'm going to go straight onto the book, Binky, because when I read it, what I love is how candid you are. It's completely no holds barred, parenthood, gore and all. And I'm going to read our listeners my favourite sentence, which is, "My placenta flew out and up through the air before landing on the floor next to Max's feet with a thwack, splattering everyone within 2 metres of its landing spot with blood. It was humongous, disgusting." So there we go. What made you write a book?
So I joined the show when I was probably 19, 20. So I've grown up in the public eye, and you've seen me go from a 20-something, partying, not having any cares in the world, to then becoming a mummy at 26, and actually the first of my friends to become a mummy. So as we know, being kind of young and frivolous and not having a care in the world to getting pregnant, especially of the first of your friends, is quite a big change. And I didn't really have many people to speak to about this change, other than my mother, Mummy Felstead, who, if you know Mummy Felstead, is very old-fashioned, very good fun, loves a drink, and is quite to the point and old-fashioned. And so she would be my go-to to ask a lot of these parenting questions to. And the reason why I wrote the book was I used to get asked, and I still do most days, these questions about how I've co-parented, how I've, things like me, you know, introducing my child India to a new partner, Max, who I'm now married to and have been for 2 years. So it's a lot of kind of, like you said, personal, there's personal parts in the book, from being a young, frivolous, you know, party goer to having India, going through a breakup, meeting someone new, kind of that little bit in between. I had an early miscarriage, which a lot of people still ask me to this day, and they're saying, you know, it's brilliant that we can see you've had another child and you're having another baby now. So it's, you know, I think I just wanted to kind of put everything that I get asked into one book, but I'm not an expert.
Stop bloody asking me, just read the book.
Do you know what though? I'm not an expert at anything. You know, all I know is how I parent and you know, how my children work. Parents, you know, parenting is different every time. And this is why, with my advice, Mummy Felstead advice, I've got actual a Bloss expert advice under each chapter. So it's kind of like how I take on things, and then here's the actual professional saying what, how you can handle it, and how, like, this is how you can go about whatever you want to, really.
Well, there's certainly, I mean, there's lots to talk about with the book, and we'll circle back to that. But since you brought it up, the question from the folks in the NetMums office, who are Made in Chelsea fans, when I told them that we would be talking to you, was, what did your Made in Chelsea friends think of your first pregnancy, since you were the first to become pregnant?
I lost a lot of friends. I've made a whole new amazing group of friends from being a mummy. But the friends that I had before when I was on the show were like, you know, my fun party friends, and actually they were all a little bit shocked, and it wasn't their fault. I think you know, it's something they couldn't comprehend. And when they were all going out in the evening, I was at home with India breastfeeding, or just bloody tired. The worst thing, I remember I was on a group chat with a bunch of girls, and it was someone's birthday, and they said, right, you know, we've got the selfie light on, put on your biggest heels and your tightest dress. And I honestly looked at this mesh and was like, fuck that, I do not want to get on my tightest dress and my highest heels and go and take selfies and then go to a club. I was just so knackered. And I think that was for me like a real like, oh my God moment. I'm not in the same headspace as you anymore. And they definitely weren't in the same headspace as me. And I think we just naturally grew apart. And of course, the friends that I've still got on the show, like Louise, Rosie, Ollie, to name a few, they've always been kind of really close, and they've loved the kind of the different stages I've been through. And now obviously they're all having kids themselves, so wanting advice or like kind of just kind of loving the kind of, I can give them bits and bobs from when India was younger or whatever. So it's been a natural development. And I think what's different is for me, it's just been on TV. It's been in the public eye. So I think, yeah, it's all been a bit of a whirlwind. When you went back to how long ago all that was, it feels like a different lifetime, to be honest. All I can remember now is I can't remember life before being a mummy.
But I think that's all mums and dads, irrespective of whether you've lived that life on a TV show or you've just lived it in your house. You cannot. I remember I was working in London before I had my first daughter, and then the idea of going on a train in a pair of heels back into London was just, I think everyone feels that same thing. It's like you shift, your whole mindset shifts, and suddenly all that stuff doesn't seem quite as fun anymore.
No.
But when you do it hard.
Yeah. Yes. And I definitely, there needs to be a balance, doesn't there, of kind of the glamorous side and then the got sick in your hair, or the running late for school this morning. And I was just like, oh my gosh, my feet were almost bleeding. I was running so hard, trying to pull Lindy along the scooter. And I just thought, right, okay. But there's some sort of balance and a little, yeah.
Well, I have a story from Allison, who is our social media manager here. So she interviewed you for her Not Another Mummy podcast. And she said she came out and did it at your home, and that then you were running out to do the school run in the afternoon, and so left her in your home and like ran out. She said, yeah, you know, I wish I would have taken an ashtray or something, you know. It sounds like Binky running around and doing the kind of regular parenting things is just a regular part of life.
Yeah, I think we all do. We all try and kind of, we all put our family first. And everything I do will work around the kids' schedule. Obviously, pickups and drop-offs, I try and do them as much as I can. I love being a mummy, and we all do. But I think I'm getting to the stage now where India's at school, so that's a lot less kind of to think about. Then I've got Wolfie, who is a hectic...
He's a toddler, isn't he?
He's a hectic toddler boy. I mean, I know lots of people say, oh, there's no difference between girls and boys, but India was very different, and she was a lot more chilled, and Wolfie's just like ripping everything off the walls and up and down the stairs, and have to have eyes at the back of my head. But yeah, I make sure everything's planned around them. I want to be involved as much as possible with the kids. My role is to be a mummy, and then everything else will fall into place around them.
You've been the focus of a fair share of criticism on social media over the years, you know, the joys of social media.
Yes, of course.
How do you think it affects mothers' social media and motherhood in general?
I think you have to be a pretty strong person to let it kind of bounce off you. And I'm pretty good at doing that. I don't really care for the comments. I don't get a huge amount, so I'm quite lucky. But if I were to get a comment about my parenting, that I like to press the block and delete button, which is brilliant. We all have one of those, so we can do that. I like to think that how I do things is the best way I can do it. And that's all I can do. I'm doing my best, and that's all we can do. So there's a lot of people out there that will try and criticize, but then I kind of feel a bit sorry for them, to be honest, because all I'm doing is my best.
Well, talking about the book and doing your best, you go into detail about, you know, even from the first month with a newborn and how scary it is, the lack of sleep, the dirty nappies, the hormone surge, all that responsibility. And you talk also very personally about how parenting transformed you from, as you were saying, something of a party girl into something else and the difficulties of that transition. What's been the most difficult part of parenthood and being a parent for you?
Good question. I think it's funny because it's kind of made me, as well as kind of it was scary at the beginning. I think just having, you have always got something to worry about now. You are no longer your only responsibility, right? So you've always got to, you will never stop worrying about your children. The baby bit is actually the easiest bit, I think, because now I'm like, okay, what's happening, you know, when she's not with me or when Wolfie's not with me or whatever, like it's going to happen. Mum says, I'm still worried about you now. I still have to call my mum if I go out, you know, to make sure she knows I've got a taxi home. So that will never end. And I think that's the bit, you love something so much and you can't have full control over them when they're older, especially. And that really scares me because I like to kind of keep them all wrapped up in a little, you know, little nest, and you can't do that for long. And that's what I think is going to worry me the most and scare me the most. It's not so much what's happening now, because I love it. I love the hecticness. It's always, yeah, of course, I'm knackered and I love my coffee in the morning. And, you know, there's moments, obviously, where we all just go, oh my God, this is, you know, just give me some time. Sometimes you just have to kind of shut the door, take a breath, and then go back in. And actually, you know, there's so many different emotions running around with you, and especially at the moment with my hormones. I am like this. Poor Max, this is kind of, doesn't know if I'm coming or going half the time. He's like, I cannot wait for you to have this baby.
So are you a, obviously you're going to go from two, which is hectic, to three. Are you a seat of your pants, see how it goes-er? Or are you a planner? Are you a kind of, right, this is how the baby's going to like come into the house? Or are you just like, it's a he, isn't it? You're having,
yes,
a little boy.
Yes.
So he'll rock up and you'll deal with what it throws at you. Namely poo.
Yeah, I'm planning the giving birth part, because that part is the bit that scares me the most, and I know I can kind of plan that. I've done it before with India and Wolfie, and I'm really happy with my decision of how I'm doing it. I've got the same doctor, same place, and same method. Hope, you know, if it works, brilliant. If it doesn't, we all know that you can't 100% plan these things. I've been told by a spiritualist that this one's going to fly out. So if I'm getting any cramps, just to go straight to the hospital and no faffing around at home. So I'm like, I'm just going to make sure I'm going to be at home the whole time for the 2 weeks before. And then I've planned the, obviously, so India, I'm putting India and Wolfie in a room together. I mean, I'm praying that works. She really wants to have bunk beds with him. So that's all being sorted, and the baby will have Wolfie's nursery. So I'm planning that much. But then, of course, the next stage is, you know, Max is working and he said he'll take a week off and then he'll be, his office, he's got an office down the road. So if anything dramatic happens, but I'm not planning. I'm not really, like you said, I'm not a planner. I kind of just see how it goes and just try my best to kind of keep everyone above water. It's in the summer though, so it'll be a spring baby, which I quite like because it's quite chilled. You don't have to wrap them all up and keep them warm, and you know, you can put them in the garden and under in the shade, and we can have the paddling pool out, and Indian Wolfie can be, you know, running around. It's gonna be, I'm kind of envisioning like the happiness and the peace of the other two, because I had Indian Wolfie in June around the same time. And it was lovely having summer babies. And so I'm kind of envisioning that again for this one, even though it's a little bit earlier. It'll be spring. So hopefully it'll be warm. And yeah.
Sounds very idyllic. I have high hopes for you.
Me too. I mean, of course, my bags will be down here, but I mean, I'll put a bit of fake tan on occasionally around the boob so I can still breastfeed. Fake tan makes everything better.
Yes, indeed.
So you just mentioned spiritualist, and a lot of my friends, their ears will prick up about that. People who are quite interested in that spiritualist, tarot, that kind of thing. Is that something that is part of your life or that you're interested in?
Yeah, weirdly, Max and I spoke about it on our first date. His mum's also a spiritualist. She actually went to the psychic school of studies where my mum went. There's a place, it's like Hogwarts in London, basically. And they are really spiritual, our family. And that's really quite rare to find a partner with the same kind of beliefs and family, this, you know, the same as ours, as our family. So that was really interesting. And we had something to talk about quite, you know, in depth. And yeah, I have crystals all over the house. We charge them under the moon. I mean, we've got to rinse them often. We do sage. I have lots of my friends coming round, and, you know, there's sometimes I'll play the counselor role, and Max will come and sage me in the house to make sure there's no negative energy in the house. So it's quite like calming, and yeah, it's like a beast. There's a lot you have to do.
Yeah, be saged before the birth, right?
I was about to say, is there going to be some sage in the birth?
I mean, we're going to have to sage the whole place up. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the birth because in researching your good self, I was looking at your Instagram.
Yeah.
And there's a pretty realistic series of videos about your birth with Wolfie. Mm-hmm. But what struck me, and I want to know the truth to this answer, please, you're so zen in those videos. You're super calm. When Max stopped filming, are you the screaming, mooing banshee, or are you super calm? Are you just really, is that how you do it?
He took ages to come. India was really quick, actually, and I was expecting. I kept being told, oh, your second one just flies out. It was not the case with Wolfie. He took ages. And I can't remember how, it's all a bit of a blur, but I had my waters broken in the morning. Then I had the epidural. So I had an epidural. And I remember them just saying, you need to kind of bounce a bit more because he's just not, there's nothing happening here. And it got to the point where I felt so out of it. I was so itchy from all the drugs. I was just like I couldn't even keep my eyes open. I was knackered. I could feel the contractions and you could see me on the gas and air. That wasn't doing anything. And I could barely keep my eyes open. And then eventually...
can we all just note the person crawling behind you?
Poppy, by the way. My assistant.
Hi, Poppy. You thought you'd got away with that, didn't you?
I'm so subtle. Yeah. So, and then they're like, wait, you get the bouncy. I had the most amazing midwife called Mona. And she was so, again, spiritualist, like she's so spiritual and just like calming. It's like, we need to get you upright because, you know, gravity, we need to get the gravity going and get the bouncy ball and just start bouncing and start. And there was Max ready to press the, I was obviously starving because I hadn't eaten since the night before because you're not allowed to eat. And he had his finger hovering over the delivery button, waiting to press order for this pizza that's waiting. So think of this pizza, think, come on, baby, please come out. I'm so hungry. And then eventually she was like, yes, this is happening, it's happening. And then of course the moaning started as, you know, the pushing started as what I was told to push. But I have to say it was pretty painful. But it was just, I was just so, I can't believe, I was floating. I was in a completely different world, it felt like. I just was so knackered. And so I'm hoping to have a quicker birth after being told this is going to fly out. I'm hoping to have a slightly quicker birth this time around.
Are you going to film this one?
I think we'll do, I like looking back on them. Like I loved, we filmed Wolfie coming up. Max was obviously just so like terrified and like kind of a little bit like grossed out. Do I go too close to the down there area? Should I going to keep up this way a little bit more? Like he didn't really know what to do, but he felt it was nice seeing the pit where they're pulling Wolfie out and just the, and then him giving, being passed to Max for the first time, and Max's eyes just watered up. Like, I love watching those back. It's quite special.
So for this birth at the moment, you don't have, you're just kind of going to wing it and hope that it's quicker? No real plans so far.
I think I've planned as much as I can. The other bit is all after upstairs, right? And what's meant to be is meant to be. I'm just kind of going to I've done it twice before, so I'm confident. But of course, you know, it could be a home birth. It could be a birth in a taxi. Like my sister-in-law nearly gave birth in the back of her car. So now I know there's always...
Or a pub car park, which is what my best friend did.
Oh, really? That's quite a great place to give birth, actually.
Well, she was on her own because her husband had gone hilariously into the pub to get the postcode because the ambulance couldn't come until they had a... So he went to the pub and her baby was born all by herself on the front seat.
I mean, that scenario is just rife for jokes and funny kind of explanations.
Well, and he's a really tall Scotsman, so he then went into Halfords the next day to ask if they had anything to get blood out of car seats. You can imagine this kind of burly Scotsman asking how you get blood out of car seats. So if you could possibly achieve one of those, Binky, so that, you know, that'll make a good story.
Yeah. I think I'd like to do it where I'm kind of planning it, though, to be honest. I think I'd like to get as much help as possible with the calming aspect. I mean, bless Max. I mean, he wasn't going to cut the umbilical cord. And as you said, the bit of the book where he came round, he's like, right, I can do it. Came round to cut the umbilical cord. And that's when he just saw this thing fly out of my vagina in the air. And just like, honestly, even my obstetrician was just like there was just, we always went silent. I don't think he's seen that. Like, he's delivered a lot of babies, but he was a little bit shocked. He's like, bloody hell. And he was covered in my blood. And then Max had just bought these beautiful new trainers that he was so proud of. And he was going to wear them to the, you know, and they've still got the blood stains on them because he can't be able to wash it off. It's a bit gross, but quite cute.
Oh.
I don't know where to go from that.
But it's massive. No wonder you're just, I mean, I'm feeling so, I mean, I know we're having, you know, babies are big and heavy, but there's the other part you don't think about is how big the placenta is, right, with them.
And I take it you didn't cook it, eat it, turn it into pills, any of that jazz?
Not for me. Not for me.
Well, so that actually brings me back to something to do with the book. It's full of so many, as we said, honest, you know, revelations and down-to-earth insights about motherhood, helpful advice from some of the experts you've gotten involved. And a key aspect of that is encouraging women to trust themselves, which is something I really liked about the book and kind of is a thread throughout the whole thing. But I want to look at the flip side of that. What's the most unhelpful advice you've gotten over the years?
I think there's an awful lot of people out there who are very happy to give their opinions when they haven't been asked for their opinions. And having India was where I got a lot of, with Wolfie, I kind of knew what was going on, right? So I didn't really kind of ask anything or kind of get much information, to be honest, because I don't think people bothered. But having India, I think I got a lot of people messaging me saying, oh, you know, hope you're looking forward to having your last shower. Good luck ever brushing your teeth again without having someone screaming on you and like throwing up. Like a lot of kind of scary, kind of intense comments like that, which turned out not to be really the case. You can, you know, mum was like, because this is why I go back to mummy, because I remember calling her just in bits, being like, I don't know what to do. I'm terrified of giving this baby any formula because you're kind of programmed not to give any formula. This should be breast is best, which we all know is the case. But mummy was like, darling, just if she's hungry and you're knackered and the baby's knackered and it, you know, it's just give her some formula. Just give her some formula. And then I did. And I was like, oh my God, okay, fine. You know, she's a healthy, happy little girl. And I tried doing the breast as well as formula for a while. But I think advice like that from mum, who's had three children herself, and she's very old fashioned, she said, don't put so much pressure on yourself. And just kind of things like that, which I have throughout the book, her advice has been monumentally helpful. But I think lots of people just kind of scaring you. It's the scaremongering that really kind of is I just hate. I hate it so much.
I've said this before on the podcast, I think, but there was I took my first daughter to the doctor when she was a tiny baby, and this little old lady came up and looked in the pram, and she was like, and I thought she was going to do the usual, oh, isn't she sweet? She went, not even a hat, and stomped off, because it was October and it was really mild, and she just, not even a hat, tottered off again. I was like, and when you're kind of hormonal and your boobs are leaking, that sort of stuff can absolutely floor you, can't it? It can just whip your legs out from under you, and then you spend the rest of the day crying. Well, I did anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that around here where I live, where you've got the older generation kind of giving their two cents and everything you're doing. Oh, you know, you shouldn't be letting him going that fast on the scooter without it. Like things like that. I'm just like, okay, yes, I know, trying. Like, I've got like the dog in one hand, India on the scooter, Wolfie like screaming, trying to catch up with his sister. You're like, that's just not helpful. Of course, you've got to take it. Like, just, I mean, you just kind of got to try and find somewhere to laugh it off. I'm looking forward to having a glass of red wine if that happens, and just sitting back and just kind of, you know, looking forward to that so much, actually.
So it sounds like having children really brought you closer to your mom. I mean, you talk a lot about her. Obviously, she's a big part of the book, a big part of your life. I mean, even was part of Made in Chelsea. How's your relationship with her changed? Has it become one of those things where now suddenly you're saying, oh, now I get it, what you were talking about?
Yes. She's always said, I couldn't wait for you to have your own children so you'd understand how it feels like. But like I said, I haven't got to that stage where she means like the whole going out and not messaging her when I've got home, or, you know, I mean, the stories that I haven't told her, you know, I even was going up the King's Road yesterday with a friend, like, oh, I used to walk up here. I couldn't afford a taxi, so I used to take my heels off after being in Raffles and walk back home to Fulham. And she said, if I knew that, oh my God, I'm so glad you never told me that. She just would just die with like fear. And I'm just, that's the bit I'm dreading the most. But Mummy and I have always been, like, we've always been incredibly close. We've kind of had that, you know, we go back to when my parents divorced and it was just me and her against the world, and my big brother and sister were at university or, you know, working in London. So it was really her and I kind of getting through the next stages of what was happening with her and my father. And yeah, she kind of lived with me in London for a bit when I was on the show. We had a little spare room for her upstairs. And so she'd come down and meet my friends and we had friends over. And it was all kind of, she was like a proper like party animal, but like not in a cringe way, but she was just really, everyone loved her because she was like the one to speak to about your issues. Like she was a bit of a kind of a go-to mummy counsellor. So my friends thought she was really cool and fun, and she loves young people. And sadly now she's got MS, so she can't do anything on her own. She's got a full-time carer, she's in a wheelchair, and that's really horrible for her because up here she's still Mummy Felstead, like kind of wants to have a bottle of champagne every day and like have fun, but then she's not able to do anything on her own or come and see the kids as much. She's not able to help ever, and you know, she'll come over whenever she can for lunch, or we'll go and see her with the kids, but it's different. So the relationship has changed in that respect quite a lot, but I think she would love to be more hands-on and able to help out. But currently she's like another, well, she's gone back to being a child again. She's having to be washed and looked after and cooked for and, you know, go to the loo with stuff. Like, do you know what I mean? It's horrible.
It must be very
hard
for you as well to watch that.
It is. Do you know what? I think I'm still coming to terms with it because, like I've said, and I think if you know who our family, she is such a brilliant mummy, but I was always going to her and she'd, you know, look after me. We'd have cuddles on the sofa, cook me dinner. I'm the youngest of three, right? So I'm very much the baby of the family, and I still feel like I am sometimes. But I feel like she's unable to be the mummy that I'm used to, and I'm still having to come to terms with the new Mummy Felstead. But yeah, I think it's a bit of, for her, it's horrific, and you know, it's horrible seeing her going through all this. And obviously I've just got to try and be as supportive as I can, but it is tough.
An adjustment for both of you, definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm going to end with a slightly strange question. Binky is obviously your nickname from childhood. So what I would like to know is, do the kids have nicknames, and does the bump have a nickname?
So India's Cakey for some reason. My mum started calling her Cakey for some reason. I think she's like small and sweet like cake. I don't know why, but she's just Cakey. And Wolfie is the Stir, or Stir, as in Mr. As in, I don't know how it's even come. We're like, hey, Stir. I don't know where it's come from, but Max started saying Stir, and now it's the Stir or Mr. And actually, I think India's going to get a new nickname because Wolfie can't say India. So I'll, you know, we'll say India, he'll say rah-rah. So she might turn into a rah-rah quite soon. I love that.
Oh.
And Mummy Felstead says Gaga, because India called her Gaga. And I love all the nicknames. They're all starting from kids, right? So I'm looking forward to what the nicknames will be for the new nickname for Wolfie eventually or whatever.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Binky. We will let you go back to the chaos of family life and growing a baby. And we look forward to hearing about your blissfully move-free birth when you have the next one.
Fingers crossed. Thank you so much. It's so lovely talking to you both.